It's Wednesday, July the 6th. It is 5 o'clock and we're in hearing room B. And we're having a hearing and possible work session in House Bill 2456, House Bill 2328. We are having a work session in Senate Bill 415, House Bill 2826, House Bill 2994, House Bill 2550, Senate Bill 297, Senate Bill 773, House Bill 2252, House Bill 2536, House Bill 2537, House Bill 2558, House Bill 2717, House Bill 2559, House Bill 2591, House Bill 2870. And this is Maria Mesa, Committee Assistant.
Come to order. We'll start out in subcommittee of Senators Hendrickson, Gardner, and Wires. We're expecting Senator Frye momentarily, and we might get called back at any moment because they're operating on a bare quorum upstairs.
Here we are.
Okay. House Bill 2328. Do we have a sign-up sheet on that? Mr. Gould, who wants to testify on 2328?
Mr. Astle is the appropriate
first party. Is Mr. Astle here?
Yes.
2328.
Is that on the agenda? Or?
Yes, it's the second bill on the agenda under hearing for possible work session. Go ahead.
I'm Dave Astle with the rail program of the PUC. House Bill 2328 is a bill which you have heard before in this committee last session. It is not changed basically from the way it was presented last session, except for three amendments to Section 6, which were requested by the floor of the Senate, requested on the floor of the Senate last session. Those changes were made. The bill is a housekeeping bill to a certain extent. I'm going to skip over all the parts that have not generated any controversy and concentrate only on the reason that the bill has come before this committee. Our record of grade crossing safety in Oregon is one which I'm very proud to have played a part in for the last 12 years. Since 1973 especially, we've reduced the level of grade crossing accidents in the state from an average of 263 a year down to 60 in 1981. It went even lower in 1982, but 1982 was not a good year for anything, and I don't want to take credit for the bad economy. That represents a 76% reduction, which outdoes any other state in the United States which has a significant amount of railroad traffic and crossings. I've heard testimony from certain people against this bill that indicates that Oregon has lagged behind California and others, and I would emphatically state that's not the truth. We have the best record, by far better record, in California or Washington in the past 10 years. Over that time, we spent about $23 million in public funds to signalize a little more than 300 grade crossings in the state. This leaves us down to the point where we now have just about 2,000 grade crossings without any signalization. These crossings are not, most of them, outstanding candidates for the full bore $80,000 per crossing installation of gates and lights. What they are is a number of crossings which will, some of which will receive one accident each year. It's almost a randomness when you get down to the medium priority level that we're dealing with now. Also, the funds for gates are diminishing at a fairly rapid rate. Inflation has taken its toll. Where we used to be able to buy one gate installation for $25,000, now the average is running closer to $80,000. So the PUC has been looking at ways of improving safety at a large number of crossings to a certain level without, say, signalizing four crossings at a cost of over $300,000. We might try to spend that $300,000 in public funds to spread it out and increase safety in a lower degree, but still a measurable increase in safety at, say, 100 crossings for the same amount of money. That is the thrust behind this bill. That's the thrust behind the opposition to this bill, because attached to that is a liability limitation. Now, since about 1973, alterations can be made in an existing grade crossing without the PUC's permission. There'll be other people here to speak on some of the disadvantages of the liability which railroads or public authorities incur when an accident occurs at a crossing. But the fact remains that unless the PUC is the agency which has been given the job of deciding what level of safety is required at each crossing in the state. And it's a job we take very seriously, and as I say, our record's been very good to date. The public authorities and the railroads have been very, very emphatically have said that if you want to do something, PUC, if you want to do something at a crossing less than putting, order us to do something less than putting in full gates and lights at the crossing, we would like not to be second-guessed in a proceeding which arises from an accident, a litigation proceeding. We would not like to be second-guessed and say, well, even though the commissioner told you to illuminate this crossing for nighttime train movement, you should have done something else. And that is why we support this bill. We think that the cooperation of the railroads and public authorities is essential to a good program. We've worked hard to get that cooperation. We work closely with all the public authorities, and the counties have told us emphatically, as well as the railroads, that they would like to have this liability limitation section in there if they are going to cooperate on a program of less than gating a large number of crossings. And specifically, we're talking about putting in illumination devices, which is a nationally recognized method of reducing the accident level at crossings at night.
Thank you.
And that's about
all
I have to say.
Other questions by the committee?
Just one, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gardner.
Did the bill, as you originally drafted it, have Section 6 in it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gardner, it did not, as I recall, when it was originally drafted three sessions ago, have Section 6 in it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have one other person signed up on this bill, Mr. Burl Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Burl Green, and I'm appearing here, I think, someone on my own and also on behalf of the Oregon Trail Lawyers Association. I'm an attorney. I've had some experience with railroad crossing litigation, and I've tried to make an effort to keep myself abreast of current status, not only in the state of Oregon, but in other states. And I think I can say without any question that if this bill is passed, it would be the only one in the United States of America that says that the railroad can use less care, less than reasonable care, which is the standard of care that all of us must use in our actions when we're dealing with our fellow human beings. I know of no other legislation that excuses the railroad or limits their liability as this bill does. And this is strictly, and I'm really talking about Section 6. Now, the bill, if the purpose of the bill is to get some type of legislation authorizing lightings at crossings, we have no objection to that. But that isn't needed. Let me go back a step. There are a number of protective devices at railroad crossings. You can start off with a simple cross bug. You can start with nothing. And that there are many that have nothing. Then you come to the next is the simple crossbuck, and then a stop sign. And then in the old days they had a wigwag. Those are pretty much passe now, but there's still some like in the city of Lebanon. And then you have flashing lights usually with bells. And the epitome is the cantilevered gates. And all the studies show. Studies made by PUC in California, studies made by PUC in Arizona, studies made by the railroads themselves in California, a number of studies, Northern California and Southern California, all show that the only effective means to prevent serious injuries and death are gates at certain levels. That doesn't mean every single crossing should have gates, because it shouldn't. They're not warranted. But I think the standard engineering criteria is that if train movements multiplied by car crossings exceed 3,000 a day, a traffic engineer will look very, very closely at that intersection to see the other elements, visibility, angle of crossing, and so forth, to make a determination as to whether gates should be there. But if you only have 14 cars a day and one train movement, there isn't anybody in the country that I know about that says you should have a gate there. And that's where they want to put lights. That's a marvelous place to put lights and make the experiment to find out if it really does any good. All I'm really trying to say, and maybe too many words, is we have always had different kinds of crossing protections, from the crossbucks to the gates, and they don't have to be relieved of responsibility to put lights on in any at any of the crossing. They can put lights on there. If you want to give them statutory authority, do so, but eliminate Section 6, which just absolves the railroad from any liability, and this puts them in a special category that nobody else has. Thanks.
Are there any questions?
I had submitted earlier, Mr. Chairman, some written material that goes in much more detail, and I didn't want to bore you and the committee with all those details. I can do it if you wish, but it was submitted some time ago.
Mr. Chairman, may I just ask one or two questions about
Senator
this bill?
Brown.
I understand that, I think, the basic controversy, but let me just ask three or four questions and we'll
sure,
quickly
I'll try to answer.
I gather the PUC says do this. Do they set this as the minimum, or do they say this must be done?
As of now, forgetting about this bill, our Supreme Court has said that what the PUC has said is minimum standard.
Is minimum standard.
Minimum standard, like in manufacture of any goods. They have certain specifications. Almost all the courts unanimously agree those are minimum standards. And that's just what the
PUC... Does that meet the reasonable man test? Does that meet the tort liability standards?
That would give... Though it is proper evidence, and that would be for the court and the jury to consider, does that meet reasonable standards under these circumstances? And the reason it becomes important is because I'll give an example of a crossing right here in Salem. In 1951, they decided to put in bells and lights, no gates. Since 1951, that intersection probably has 20 times the cars. And finally, a year and a half ago, they put in gates on that particular intersection. The reason they did, because one person was so horribly mutilated that, they just did it. And not because of any studies, but because they knew and had known for years that the conditions had changed. And so if that case goes to a jury, the jury would be allowed to consider what PUC required, but under the changing conditions over the last 20 years, what the railroad should have known about putting in gates.
Is the issue then, is it a question for the jury, or is it a matter of law adequate? Is that the issue?
Well, initially it's a matter of law. And then if the judge says, okay, it can go either one, it's a question for the jury, then it goes to the jury.
Okay. And how do other states handle the same problem?
If
you know.
I know pretty well. I can't give you the exact numbers. Up until 1973, Oregon was in the majority of states that said you cannot require a railroad to use additional care other than a standard crossbuck or a horn on a train unless the crossing is, quote, extra hazardous. Okay, unquote. Extra hazardous could have lots of different meanings, and many states use that same terminology or something similar.
It's a common law rule.
Well, except there's more. The railroad had extra protection that you and I didn't have in driving our cars. Before the railroad was required to use additional protection, the person hurt had to show there's an extra hazardous crossing. 1973, the Supreme Court said, that's a bunch of malarkey. The railroads are no different than automobile drivers or anybody else. Extra hazardous is out. They have to use reasonable care, as anybody else does. Now, this bill will not only go back to the extra hazardous situation, but go back, make it even further, even showing extra hazardous under this bill would not give the injured party any rights. You'd have to show that something had occurred well, the wording is in Section 6, and I won't bore you with it, something that occurred that totally changed the intersection since the PUC ruling. Now, you asked about other states. Most other states have now dropped one way or another, either by statute or by judicial decision, the word extra hazardous. Most states now say railroads must use reasonable care at crossings. Some states still use that word or a similar word, but it is not interpreted as strictly as it had been before. In fact, almost all intersections in some states are considered crossing a road at grade level are considered extra hazardous. So the law changed in Oregon in 1973 has changed throughout the nation in the last 60, 70, 75 years. The philosophy behind protecting the railroad was so they could get across the country and develop the West and let's give them this protection. Well, the West is developed now. They don't need that protection anymore. And so they have, and states have almost uniformly recognized that.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Frey.
Pearl, Section 6, of course, would absolutely prohibit a civil action in the event the railroad did what the PUC commissioner told the railroad to do. What's your reaction to, instead of this outright prohibition here, what would be your reaction to the language that would say that the PUC order would be prima facie evidence of reasonableness?
That, of course, that's better than what it is here. It's, but I think you run into those problems. I think you realize, Senator, that with products liability, and where we have some states, and I guess there's federal legislation pending that's saying that the manufacturer meets standards as prima facie evidence of proper manufacturing. I think that's going to give an awful lot of trouble. I think it has in the states where that's something like that has happened. And once again, I don't see a reason to give the railroads something different. And particularly when, let me just emphasize one more point. When it's known that on these intersections that meet the engineering standards 3,000 movements a day, when gates are put there, 90%, 86 to 90, the true figures, depending on which test you have, of people's lives are saved, even though they might increase traffic 25 to 35%. It's amazing what gates do. And it's the only thing that is a safety factor at intersections. They've shown, there's a national study on horns, on the audibility and visibility of trains, or visibility and audibility of trains at crossing. It's a very hard study for me to read because it's very technical, but it comes down, what it says is that train horns are not sufficiently audible to 50% of the population inside closed cars. They can't hear it in time to stop. So the horn doesn't do any good. And trains can't stop on purpose. They can't stop because they're using any 1872 braking system. So if a train's going 60 miles an hour, it's a 100-car train on the level, and a car is going 60 miles an hour alongside, and the train goes into emergency, those, which is all it can do, that's the most it can do, and the driver of the car turns the key off, the car will stop faster than the train will. So brakes aren't any good, and the horns aren't any good, and the only thing that saves lives are the gates. So when you get an intersection that has that much traffic, that's all that can be save people's lives.
Has there ever been an accident where the railroad was held liable and there were gates that you know of in Oregon?
I don't know of any anywhere. I do know there's a famous case out of Arizona where there were flashers and gongs, but no gates. And it was a complicated, I think, either 3 or 4 track intersection. And they were held liable in that case for not having gates because a study made by the Southern Pacific Company in California showed how effective gates were, and the people in Arizona, Southern Pacific people in Arizona, were not informed about that study. And so there actually was punitive damages allowed in that case.
Okay, well, we're going to have to fly. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you for hearing.
Mr. Chairman, apparently my name didn't get on your list.
Well, we The list has been here since 5 o'clock, I believe, and we've been here 6 months, and we're about to leave. And you've about worn out your welcome with the chair. So I don't care to hear from you tonight, Mr. Gould. Thank you. The chair now moves to table Senate Bill 2328. House Bill 2328. Please call the roll.
Brown.
No.
Fry. Gardner.
Aye.
Fry.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Hendrickson.
Aye.
Wires.
Aye. Motion carried. Now, I do not, as the chairman of this committee, take it lightly when a member of the lobby threatens a member of this committee over a bill. Mr. Gould, I want that on the record. If you care to communicate with me about that, you can do it by letter, or you can see the President of the Senate.
I haven't any idea what you're talking about.
Well, I will talk with you later, not now. I'm in a hurry right now. House Bill 2870. This bill we put on the schedule because a bill that passed the House has gone to the Ways and Means Committee and has gotten tangled up there. That call the Senate. Okay. Well, we'll be back as soon as we can. We're in recess. To order. Okay, in our bill books under 2870, which is a bill that we've tabled,
I
always knew that bill might be good for something.
I was hoping it was not going to have
If you look at your amendments dated 7683, in my bill file, they're the first thing, you'll see that on line page 1, line 2, you delete police dogs and insert law enforcement and delete the statutory site.
2870?
Yeah.
Correct.
2870. And then it reads, no law enforcement agency of the state of Oregon or of any political subdivision of the state shall use agency monies, material, or personnel for the purpose of detecting or apprehending persons whose only offense is that they are persons of foreign citizenship residing in the United States in violation of federal immigration laws. This is to clarify that the federales want to check into people that may not have documentation. They're free to do it, but that the state of Oregon and the political subdivisions law enforcement will do it. This is passed the House floor. There were some reservations in the House. Some way or another, this got assigned down to Ways and Means.
Is this going into the guide dog bill?
Yeah. We're going to have to amend a relating clause.
Okay. Has this language been through this other language?
It passed the House.
This is exactly the language.
Bill, right? But what happened to the House bill?
The House bill got down to Ways and Means.
Got
one hearing in a subcommittee. And this is a...
got it. It's dying down there.
It's dying down there.
All right.
The President of the Senate said that he didn't mind, since that was happening, if we amended this into a...
I move the amendment, Mr.
Okay.
You see that amendment, Senator?
Senator Gardner moves that House Bill 2870 be removed from the table. Is there any objection? If not, so ordered. Now, Senator Gardner moves to amend House Bill 2870 by adopting the amendments dated 7683 with legal counsel at the top, which in essence take everything out of House Bill 2870 and place into it what was House Bill
2450,
which passed the House months ago and went down to Ways and Means, got one hearing finally in a subcommittee and isn't moving. And the Senate President suggested that I requested that we do this, and I've discussed it with the former speaker, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. He knows we're doing this. He's happy with that plan.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hendricks.
I'm very happy we're doing this, too. I have been sending notes down to Ways and Means.
This is better
this
than
is
sending
a very good bill. Yeah.
This is better than sending a note.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Much more
sound. Is there any objection to Senator Gardner's amendment? If not,
I'm afraid I'm out of step here. Is this the police dog bill again?
Okay, we're taking the police dog bill, and all that there'll be left of it is the number, practically.
All right. And we're putting this immigration law thing in?
Right. Right.
Okay.
It's not...
No longer a dog bill, then.
No longer a dog bill.
It says
that's the only reason we took the dog bill off the table.
Okay.
Okay. Is there any objection to Senator Gardner's motion? If not, it's adopted. Senator Gardner moves House Bill 2870 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation discussion. If not, please call the roll.
Brown.
Aye.
Fry.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Hendrickson.
Aye.
Wires.
Aye. Motion carried. Now, Senator Brown, are you ready to move, next...
With May Yee's bill?
May Yee's, Senator Yee's bill. That is number...
2550.
Yeah. I've carefully looked that bill over and...
enthusiastic. I'd like to carry it, and I move that it...
And it was a deal.
2550. Okay. Now, well, counsel, have we adopted all the amendments that we wanted to? I think we did, but let's just double check here.
2550. Yeah, could I find out what version we're now?
Yeah.
Okay. What I did is a mock-up that's dated today's date, which looks like this.
In our little file.
Yeah, it should be in there with amendments.
Is it 50 or 52? Oh, 50.
2550.
My bill's in reverse order.
As I recall, we adopted all the amendments to it, didn't we? We wanted to?
Yeah. There were some deletions on the House side, which I was concerned about. But reviewing the bill, how they structured it, they did not lose any of the valuable aspects, and I think that's Mr. Cooper's understanding. It's in good shape.
Okay. It's Class A misdemeanor. We raised to $350.
Cooper problem. Has rattled his head in an up and down fashion.
Okay. Senator Brown now moves House Bill 2550 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
And, Mr. Chairman, no amendments are necessary, right?
We've already adopted all the amendments, all right. I believe. Is that not right, Counsel?
Well, it turns out that this really is the amendment. It's just to delete lines 9 through 12 of the printed House amendments. If somebody wants to remove that.
Well, we did have to put in the Class A misdemeanor.
That was in the House amendments. I'm merely deleting the provision on suspending execution of sentence.
Okay, have we not already done that?
Well, I was looking back at my
notes. Let's do it for safety's sake.
Okay, Senator Gardner moves that we delete lines 9 through 12 of the printed House amendments dated April 8th. Is there objection?
That's the proper motion, right?
Yes. Not, it's so ordered. Now Senator Brown moves House Bill 2550 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? If not, please call the roll.
Brown.
Aye.
Fry.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Hendrickson.
Aye.
Wires.
Aye. Motion carried.
Vote explanation.
Senator Fry.
As the committee knows, I am not in favor of minimum mandatory sentences, but this happens to be existing language, and so I'm supporting the bill. But if it were a bill we're proposing that for the first time, I'd probably oppose it. I think all of us here are a little bit concerned about the loss of the court's discretion in some of these situations. Is that pretty quick?
That's a bill that we passed out of committee where there was miscommunication over what the House amendments were supposed to do.
Tell us more.
Okay. House Bill 2994 was a bill we passed out, I believe, last week relating to authorizing Children's Services Division to provide evaluation and treatment in incest cases. Mm-hmm. In the House amendments were a provision. And if you'll go to that bill, hopefully it's at the top that shows proposed changes to that, where the committee felt there was a duplication of language on the issue of restitution. As it turns out, what they had wanted was a provision where the court could order the defendant, as a condition of probation, to pay to the provider, not to the victim, which is where restitution goes, the reasonable cost of, and I've put in some possible changes so that the scope of this isn't so broad, of psychiatric or psychological treatment or other counseling services to the victim or victims and the victim's family, which would include, if the defendant is related, the perpetrator. This ties in with their budget, and this only went to Ways and Means on the House side. I've discussed these proposed changes that would limit the language and clarify the language with both the Attorney General and CSD, and this is what they really wanted to accomplish rather than what the original House amendment said. So if the committee wants to approve that, because it's sort of part of the other part of the bill, as it turns out, they feel like they need to be able to go to the... Anyway.
I so. Think we reconsider the vote by which we passed House Bill 2994.
Is there any objection to Senator Hendrickson's motion? If not, so ordered. Now, Senator...
I move the amendments suggested by council.
All right. Does everyone see those in their file folder?
Yep. Okay, 7683, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Is everybody okay on those? If so, is there any objection to Senator Hendrickson's motion? If not, it's adopted. I've gone over this with council.
I move the bill with to do pass.
Okay. Please call the roll.
Brown?
Aye.
Fry?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye.
Hendrickson?
Aye.
Wires?
Aye. Motion carried. It's not four votes. Please call the roll.
Senator Frost?
Aye.
Senator Gardner?
Aye.
Senator Hendrickson?
Aye.
Senator Wyer?
Aye. Motion carried. Senate Bill 415, do we have some printed amendments for that?
Yeah.
Are they dated 7283?
Correct.
And is this just, this just does the liens?
Correct. And wait, one other minor.
Is Senate Bill 415 on the table at this time?
Yes.
Chair moves Senate Bill 415 off. Well, wait a minute. Let's see if everybody wants to buy this before I make any motions. What's the other minor thing? We had these liens checked out with the assistance of the private lending institutions to make sure that they don't, not the title companies, to make sure they not wreak havoc, and that's all been clarified, right?
Okay. The one thing that the Attorney General's office would like to include, if you look on page 4 of the amendments, line 28, and Bob Hamilton from the Attorney General's office is here, they want to add to the laundry list of offenses covered by the RICO Act provisions relating to real estate and escrow.
Well, I'd be willing to do that, but I don't know if I want to elevate offenses that are not felonies in the farm labor contractors law to
the committee RICO. Formally did that.
I'd request that you did that because that would allow, there's some very serious problems in terms of the
I heard the testimony in the Senate Labor Committee, and I concur entirely that there are serious problems, but I've looked at these offenses under 658, and they're not Class C felonies, even.
Well, I thought they were Class C felonies.
I don't believe they
are. Well, they will appear in Senate Bill 150.
Yeah,
the committee had formally adopted that.
This is just a cross-reference, and they...
Well, if they're not felonies, then they wouldn't be picked up, but I thought they were Class C felonies. The Attorney General said he had no objection to
this. She's right. This is just, but Mr. Chairman, this is just, you know, we're just tracking here through related changes.
Okay. Well.
Well, the committee has not formally adopted the real estate and escrow provision.
Okay. Well, if we adopt these amendments, we will. Do you want to have real estate and escrow violations be included under the lien?
Whose idea is that?
Attorney General's.
Why?
Could they explain them?
Could you tell us why, sir?
Bob Hamilton from the Attorney General's Office. Basically, the position, it was an oversight in the original legislation. We have been concerned for some time, and I think there's justification to be concerned about the laundering of funds into property. Property is the basis behind the lien provisions. There's historical precedent in this type of activity for the use of real property as a laundering mechanism, as well as the
List along with banks, bank institution, mutual savings banks. Right. Okay, the chair moves the LC amendment 14. The chair moves Senate Bill 415 from the table. Is there objection? It's adopted. Chair moves the adoption of LC 415-17283. Is there objection? If not, it's adopted. The chair now moves Senate Bill 415 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Discussion.
I just have a point. I'm just reading the first page, and this deletes all of the old bill. Is that correct? The effect of these amendments. So there is nothing remaining of the old bill. Is that correct?
Well, there's some minor changes that were made in...
talking about anything to do with the forfeiture of people's property based on possession of marijuana.
Because the original bill I was very strongly in opposition to, so I want to make sure there's nothing left of that bill.
The only thing that is left that was in the other bill that could be deleted from this one, because it is in the other bill, is on page 8, lines 8 through 14.
Page 8 of the original bill?
Page 8 of the
amendments.
About the recovery of attorney's fees?
Right, and costs.
That's the only thing that remains the same in the two bills, is that what you're saying?
Yes. And the provisions that the committee moved in Senate Bill 150 relating to the disposition of forfeited proceeds are not in this bill.
This doesn't appear to be redundant, however. This is just saying they recovered in the
right.
150, it says what percentage and so on.
Okay, but it doesn't have any of that forfeiture language that was in the original bill. So you're saying the only
415.
Thing. The original 415.
I'm sorry. I didn't understand your question. All of 415 is totally deleted by these amendments.
Yeah. Okay. Is there any further questions? Please call the roll.
Senator Frye?
Aye.
Senator Gardner?
Aye.
Senator Hamby?
Okay, yes.
Senator Hendrickson?
Aye.
Senator Wyer?
Aye. Motion carried.
This is to let them have liens.
Do you want to do anything with that?
I guess
you didn't know. What's 773?
I got to get Kathy.
Senator Day. Oh, is that Kathy's bill?
Yeah. I'm done with everything except the Happy Canyon bill.
Okay. Happy Canyon. 2456. Got a list here of groups that are in support of this. I think I've got the only copy.
No, like agencies.
Agencies.
Maybe it is in
there. Do you have that? Crippled Children's Division, Multnomah County Association of Retired Citizens, Easter Seal, Oregon Hemophilia Foundation. Boy, gambling is big. Oregon School of Arts and Crafts, Cerebral Palsy, Edwards Center, Boys and Girls Aid Society, Archdiocese.
I've had about
of Portland.
A half a dozen calls on that today.
We did. Mm-hmm. There were proposed amendments.
What is the Happy Canyon exception?
Council.
As I understand it, the Happy Canyon exception is for those kinds of fundraising events where they people purchase tokens and then sort of do those sort of play acting casino style thing, and then it limits the amount of tokens that you can purchase within a 24-hour period. If you look at on lines 23 to 24 of the bill, that's what this bill does.
It's the legislature's way of getting around the lottery prohibition in the state constitution, isn't it?
Is that what it is?
Well, I don't know the history. I believe the history of this came out of the Pendleton Roundup, because they had done a fundraising for periods of years. And then it limits what the tokens can be exchanged for. They can only be exchanged for property other than money. And then they can exchange them on the premises only if it's for a beverage or merchandise consumed on the premises, and they're not, otherwise they're not redeemable on the premises where the contest is conducted or within 50 miles.
So it makes it a Happy Canyon?
That's what it's called.
You know more about semi-bill what it is, I know.
Well, actually, if you're serious about where the name came from, I can tell you.
What is it? I'm curious.
Happy Canyon is the runs right along parallel with Pendleton Roundup. It's kind of the concession end of the Pendleton Roundup. They call it Happy Days, and it's Happy Canyon. Not Happy Days, Happy Canyon. That's
Oh, so it was where they had all the gambling things?
Yeah. And everything else, lots of booze and fun and games.
Happy games.
And what, have you ever been there? How do these tokens work there?
Oh, I haven't been there with the token part. No. They used to do it with real money when I was there.
Well, do you want a motion on the bill?
It changes it. It allows you to exchange.
This one is another inflation adjusting bill.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, Senator Gardner moves House Bill 2456 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I just noticed, are these amendments that Senator Cohen is suggesting? I don't see that.
The Attorney General.
Who is suggesting
these
amendments?
Senator Thorne, I guess. Has he talked to any member of the committee about them? Yes.
Nobody's talked to me about them.
They seem to be enlarging things quite a bit.
Yeah. I think that's right.
I think maybe we're enlarging this enough with that.
All right. I think that's reasonable.
Okay. Further discussion. Please call the roll.
Senator Frye?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye.
Hamby?
Aye.
Hendrickson?
Aye.
Wires.
Aye. Motion carried. Does that phone ring up into the committee or only ring security, doesn't it?
Glenda went to get Kathy.
Okay. The bills we have left are Kathy's bills. One of them that I know about is, without needing her here yet, is 2558. That's one that Representative Bradbury is very concerned about. We've got a little policy decision to make here. There's an amendment that was added.
What bill is this?
2558. And there was a bill that was added to repeal, to overrule a recent appellate decision, Supreme Court decision, that held PGE liable for a child getting into a pool at, I think, Bagby Hot Springs. There are pools there, from my reading of the Court of Appeals case. I haven't read the Supreme Court case. Some of the pools are hotter than others, and there wasn't a sign immediately adjacent to the pools, although there were some at some distance.
Some trails with signs, some without.
Yeah, and the child was with a grandparent and got into the pool and got scalded.
Right.
And I think they won at the trial court, lost the Court of Appeals, and won at the Supreme Court. I talked to Representative Bradbury.
They lost it finally, right?
Yes.
PGE on the ground that was not finally. Reckless.
Yeah.
PGE finally lost.
Right.
I think. Yeah. Finally, the
plaintiff. Well, this is sent back to the court.
Oh, they did.
The Court of Appeals. The jury had it won.
Yeah, I read that case, and it just all it was a. It basically was an appeal from a jury determination, as I recall. They found that they were not improperly instructed.
Oh, but the Court of Appeals, they found that the standard of care had been met by the defendant.
Well, and that a jury could not have concluded that it was reckless behavior.
But then at the Supreme Court level, the plaintiff...
Jury form, properly instructed?
Yeah. Of course, I have a plaintiff's bias, so I would rather listen to the other members of the committee on this. I want to get the bill out.
It's not just a matter of plaintiff's bias with me. I don't want a monkey. I think this Supreme Court opinion, I've got it here.
Did I read it correctly? Is that basically what it says?
Yeah. And,
do you not want a monkey the Supreme Court?
I don't want a monkey with this particular opinion. I'm not averse to monkeying with the Supreme Court on occasion, but I don't think this opinion's wrong. They applied the restatement section 500, which I have got here, in case anybody's interested in it.
How did this bill pass the House? In what form did it pass the House?
I think it passed the House without this particular issue in it, and then in the Senate Economic Activities Committee, I believe that the Bagby Hot Springs amendment got put in.
I'm trying to figure out in what form then it did just pass the House.
That's to add salmon and trout enhancement to recreational uses, where they set they give a lower standard of care to owners of private property who allow people to come on their property for recreational purposes.
It's like the gleaning sort of thing.
What do you think of, and that would be the standard that was applied in the PGE case then of recklessness right now, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of just doing that, which was, I guess, the original House bill?
That's okay with me. Sounds like that's what Senator Frye wants to do.
Is that what Representative Bradbury wanted to do too?
Representative Bradbury is neutral. He wants the bill, and he wants us to work our will on that other issue.
Could we restore the bill to our past?
Past the House, that's what Senator Gardner said.
Could I ask a question, because I have not read any of these cases. So the opinion then set a higher standard of care for an owner of a hot springs in terms of signing or
no.
I guess I don't understand
it. The Court of Appeal, there was a jury instruction that it was recreational, and therefore you had to show recklessness, okay? Court of Appeals, and there's a plaintiff's verdict. Court of Appeals reversed and said this a jury could not have found recklessness based on these circumstances, could not reasonably have found recklessness, and the Supreme Court said the jury was properly instructed and could so have found recklessness.
Even though they had signs in them.
There was some debate about whether the signs were close enough to the hazard.
When the grandmother went in with the child, there was no sign. It was an unmarked trail, and she went up to the water's edge, and the kid fell in off a rock, and boom, boiled.
If you went in another way, you would have seen a sign.
Right. But it had to do with the standard of whether the jury was properly instructed and whether it could under that instruction have found that their behavior was reckless.
So this amendment would put it would be harder
different
intentional to get liability. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So liability.
Okay. But we wanted to stay away from the issue in the recent Supreme Court case on 2558. We would delete the Senate amendments and pass the bill.
No, you'd have to delete Section 2 of the bill, I think. Oh, maybe that is the amendments.
Section 2 of the bill, as it left the House, just adds people who are involved in, volunteers who are involved in the salmon
enhancement
to the.
So it would only have Section 1 in it. Right.
No, both sections were in the original bill, it would appear. One's the definition section. Yeah. And
what you want to look at, this is a March 24 House amendments, I think.
Yeah.
We just would probably want to eliminate the Senate amendment.
I think
correct.
You just eliminate the Senate amendment.
Right.
I so move.
Okay. Senator Hendrickson moves that we amend the bill as it came to us by eliminating the Senate amendments.
And there's no concurrence problem.
No, that's right. It'd be
nothing
to concur with.
Section 2.
Okay. Section 2 of the Senate amendments.
Yeah.
There's still a Section 2. There will still be a Section 2 in the bill that passed the House.
We just take out.
No.
No.
There will not. It will be. There will be no concurrence. It'll go straight through.
Yes, right.
Yeah. But what I'm looking at is House Bill 28 and 58.
That's not the way it passed the House, though.
What's the way it passed the House?
The March 24 amendments.
You
right
have
here.
A paste of the mock. Yeah. The amendments are how it came out of the House.
If we delete the Senate amendments, it'll go
shoot right through.
Yeah.
You should have a mock-up that made this all clear. Yeah. This is how it came out of the House. Basically the way the amendments were.
Okay, with no Section 2 in it, I stand corrected. Is there any more discussion on Senator Hendrickson's motion? If not, please call the roll.
What's the
okay,
motion?
I see.
To delete the Senate amendments.
Okay.
And then in the summer, I guess.
They do that.
Is there any objection to Senator Hendrickson's motion? Not as adopted. Senator Gardner now moves House Bill 2558 as it came to the Senate from the House to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Call the roll, please.
Brown?
Aye.
Fry?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye.
Amby?
Aye.
Hendrickson?
Aye.
Wires.
Aye. Motion carried.
I'd be glad to carry that.
What would be the next quickest bill?
Well,
297. You want to move 297?
I moved to table it.
That's the best motion I've heard all day.
Okay, Senator Gardner moves to table Senate Bill 297. That is the...
It's too much too soon.
Okay, please call the roll.
What is the bill?
What is the bill?
That's
very quickly.
A very good bill that
yeah.
on establishing state cause of action, like constitutional.
Skip Durham was here on.
Right.
It's like a little 1983.
A flower that bloomed.
Too late.
Too late. Please call the roll.
Senator Brown?
No.
Fry?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye.
Hamby?
Aye.
Hendrickson?
No.
Wires?
Turkey. No, I can't vote. No, aye. I don't play that game with this committee. I've served under chairs who voted no a lot when there are enough votes, but I won't do that. Especially when Senator Hendrickson takes my off. Let's see. 773. It's tabled. You just blocked me from voting no. But that's,
it's a dirty job.
You and Senator Brown.
Which one's the bill? Why don't we...
773.
Is it late in the day?
Yeah, you need to do
773. Can we...
crank it all up?
Can we table that?
Table it? No.
Okay, tell us about it.
Okay. Last time 773 was here, this is the county lien docket, so they can get the warrants, the liens for the agencies. They're going to have the county clerk record them. They went off. They all agreed. They went off. They got some LC amendments drafted. I have them. I have their amendments to them, which are mostly substituting record for docket and things like that.
Which ones are we looking at now?
773.
I know, but I mean...
You have one legislation.
We don't have any LC amendments, do we?
7583 is the LC.
And the county's and everybody's fine. 773-1. The Department of Justice, Multnomah County, Washington County, Craig Chisholm, everyone has agreed.
Department of Revenue has agreed?
Yes.
Great. I move these amendments, Mr. Chairman.
As amended.
LC amendments.
The LC amendments.
More, right. I have some amendments to those amendments, which are mostly technical.
Oh, you haven't seen those.
I just got them at... well, I got them at 5 o'clock.
If they're just technical.
It's more of the same. It's substituting the word record for the word file, the word record for the word docket.
I think we have this. I mean, well, I guess go through them then, I guess.
Conceptually, those
but they're
technical.
Conceptually, we could.
Technical notes.
They're just technical, Jim. I remember seeing
them. We could have...
it's very much the same.
No, thank you.
It's very much the same language that takes up all of the LC amendments.
All right.
Only it's adding it in a couple of pages where it was left out.
Okay, so moved.
Okay. Is there objection, Senator Gardner? Not adopted. Now, did that include the proposed amendments by Lawrence
yes.
Young? Do we need any other amendments?
No.
Move it out, do pass.
Okay. Senator Gardner moves Senate Bill 773 to the floor of the do pass recommendation. Please call the roll.
Brown?
Aye.
Fry?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye.
Hamby?
Aye.
Henderson?
Aye.
Wires?
Aye. Motion carried. Who wants to carry that?
Not in there.
No.
Here. Senator Hamby should carry that one.
Someone carry that one.
What was that? Are you kidding?
You're pretty good
Washington
on lean,
County
Senator.
Was the one that
Senator Fry should
one of the
I'll
first
carry anything.
Flags.
Okay, Senator Fry. Carry that bill.
Unless I am opposed to it, then I won't carry it.
House Bill 2252.
No,
that might be the way to do
it's
it.
A big mess.
Okay, House Bill, we're going to carry 2252, 2536. The Committee on the Judiciary at the request of the State Court Administrator.
Requires designation of record for appeal by party.
Oh, this is really simple.
Oh, yeah, sure.
This is very simple.
Okay.
Tells you how to file the designation of record.
Served when you're not the appellant, right?
It's both. It's when you're the appellant and...
is it? Any other party? No, when you're not the appellant, right?
For a party other than the appellant, right.
I'll...
Senator Gardner moves House Bill 2536 for the due pass recommendation. Please call the roll.
Brown?
Aye.
Fry?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye.
Hamby?
Aye.
Henderson?
Aye.
Wires?
Aye. Motion carried. Senator Hendrickson will carry that. She tells... let's see. House Bill 2537. See amendments.
Yeah, I didn't think we wanted to reduce those time periods.
Hmm?
I
This extended them. No, as amended by the House, it extends them from 28 days to 35 days.
Well, this was just making things into round numbers. Did it seem to confuse anything to anybody?
No, now that I see the House members, I thought the original bill shortened it.
Right.
Why is 28 any rounder than 30? Why is 28 any rounder?
They wanted to make it in weeks.
It was easier to compute.
It increases the days.
It increases by women.
35 days.
It had to be divisible by 7.
Yeah.
Is this the way the House
Yes.
Okay, we've got a mock-up here. It's the way it left the House. Has anybody contacted the committee to say they've had any problems with this?
I like the idea.
Everyone likes it.
Expanding the idea. The bar should like that.
Senator, the chair now moves House Bill 2537. What happened?
Beth Gilson lost it.
An attack. I'll move this. Are there any amendments?
No.
No. I move chair's already moved.
Oh,
2537. Please call the roll.
Brown.
Aye.
Fry.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Hamby.
Aye.
Hendricks.
She lost it.
Wyer.
Aye. Motion carried. 2717. Specify standards and procedures relating to expunction of juvenile records. We had a hearing on this.
I had some amendments. I got them approved.
I don't see them in my file.
No. There are a few little things on my bill. There are three things. Can I just tell you what they are?
Yes.
Who are they from?
Council.
They're my amendments. I got Don Welch and the Juvenile Rights Project to approve them. They're just technical things in the bill. On page 1 at line 9, they make a reference to an agency specified in a subparagraph. That subparagraph has been relettered.
Okay.
So I'm deleting at line 9 paragraph sub B of because it's now been renumbered and it doesn't refer to the right subsection anymore. On page 2, line 5, it's talking about records for a support obligation of the juvenile. This language that says in juvenile court or consolidated proceedings has caused a lot of confusion. It's not necessary if we just said records related to a support obligation and delete the rest of the line. That's perfectly fine and accomplishes everything we want to accomplish.
Okay.
page 3, line 36. This has to do with responsibility for providing the names of agencies that might have records. And I think that rather than saying agencies which are known to the department, what they meant to say was to parallel the language above, agencies which a reasonable search of the department files indicates have expungible records, rather than just what agencies do you know. And rather than saying those provided by the subject child, which indicates that the child has to provide some, to delete those and insert any provided by the subject child. That was all.
Is there any objection to Senator Hendrickson's motion? Not. It's adopted. Chair now moves House Bill 2717 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Please call the roll.
Brown?
Aye.
Fry?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye.
Hamby?
Aye.
Hendrickson?
Aye.
Wyer?
Aye. Motion carried. Now, this 2859. We're working off these House amendments dated June 8. Senator Cohen told me that she would rather not move to amend this bill after getting more information and advice, and she can make her record on the floor regarding that point. Has anyone heard anything different from that?
No, I just have a question.
Senator Hendrickson.
These health amendments were approved by Bob Ackman.
Is Senator Cohen comfortable with the bill in its present form?
That's my understanding.
She
told you that.
I think she told Representative Hill.
Representative Hill.
Real brief.
Following the last hearing on 2859, Senator Cohen and Kathleen Bouffet and I stood out in the hall and talked about her her concern, and at that time, Senator Cohen said that she felt that her question was answered by Kathleen Buffet, and she felt the bill was all right
okay.
in its present form. Now, that's just, you know, that's what she told me. So.
Okay. Well, that's right. what she told me and counsel, and she hasn't
all right.
told any of the rest of us any contrary, right? Okay, because she isn't here. But.
I'd move to the bill to the fourth, the two-pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Hendrickson now moves House Bill 2859 to the floor as it left the House with a do-pass recommendation. Please call the roll.
Brown?
Aye.
Broad?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye.
Hamby?
Aye.
Hendrickson?
Aye.
Wire?
Aye. Motion carried. Last bill, 2891.
Well, I don't know if you want to do this tonight. This is the... This is... These are the civil procedure rules that the Council on Court Procedures came and walked us through, and it works in reverse. If we don't find any problems and get the House to agree, then everything becomes a new rule.
Yeah, we had some little ideas.
I thought we made little amendments.
Well, you did, and so I've given you all this little document that says amendments proposed by the committee, which is a Xerox.
I think maybe we better spend 15 minutes with this. Not tonight.
Yeah,
not
tonight.
I think you're right. Okay.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
There's something I think we'd really like to discuss. I really enjoyed the meeting we had with us, so I'd like to focus one last time.
We got some class action stuff in here?
Rule 32. That's on the next to last page.
in
invisible ink.
You can amend it in.
You have to have the right kind of glasses to see it.
Do we have, by the way, any communication from the council on this?
They, other than when they came and talked with us, do you mean have they seen these proposed amendments?
Yes.
We went through them with them at the hearing.
Any problem with the council?
They agreed to everything that we were suggesting at the hearing, I think.
Have they seen the written one?
No, but I had a specific question for Senator Fry. You raised some concerns about Rule 40, which had to do with written depositions on stipulation, and I asked Pete to check with you and see if you still had any language. The language that is in here, we raised it with them that night when they were here, and they said they didn't have any problems with it. I haven't sent them this, no.
I would like, Ms. Chairman, I would think it would be appropriate if somebody from the council of spread or somebody can take a look at that stuff tomorrow, the written stuff, and see if they'll buy off on it.
Okay.
I think that'd be the most expeditious way to...
Yeah, and then we'd probably like to look at it ourselves to be sure it's what we...
Of course.
Okay. Now, tomorrow is another day.
Not like today.
We've scheduled most of the bills that came over today from the...